Sauce Trunk, a weekly trunk load of open source.
Hi, and welcome to Sauce Trunk episode 4, recorded on Monday, the 16th of October, 2006. This podcast will try to demystify the beautiful beast that is open source and show the listeners the more practical examples of open source and free software. I will grab an open source application from the source trunk, that is the internet, and it can be an office application, server software, or multimedia software. It can be system tools, audio software, whatever. Some of you will surely notice that I'm only taking one application now instead of two, and instead of the three where I started with. That is because I noticed last time that I was really monitoring the clock to get it all crammed into half an hour, and it's a bit too stressful to be good, actually. So I would like to concentrate more on the one application and have more fun with little extra I'm adding onto it. Let me know if this is okay for you people. I promise I won't change the formats until I really get complaints about it or I really have another idea to do, but this one will do for now. Okay, I'll be drinking a brown Maritsu with this episode. It's a Belgian beer, of course, and it comes from the Benedictine Abbey of Maritsu. They gave the production to Duvel Moordgat Brewery, that is the brewery that made Duvel, which I reviewed in the first episode. Has a really nice brownish color. Okay. Nice. And so the monks gave it to the Duvel Moordgat Brewery. This happened in 1963. And I don't think they're really happy about it, because on their website, they don't really elaborate a lot on it. Yes, monks do have websites too. Times have changed. This is a Maritsu brown. You have them in blonde as well. The blonde is 6 degrees alcohol. The brown is 8 degrees alcohol. And you have the triple as well, which is 10 degrees alcohol. Duvel Moordgat added the specific bottle fermentation on this one, which they do for Duvel as well. They describe it as aromatic, delicate, fruity, and velvety. Let's try it. Yeah, well, it fits. Let's go.
System tools.
Tight VNC. First, let me give you a description of the VNC protocol for those of you who don't know what the VNC protocol can do. It's a desktop sharing system, like, for example, the remote desktop protocol or Apple's remote desktop. It'll send mouse pointers and keyboard strokes to the computer that you are controlling. And it will send back the screen updates so that you can see what you're doing. The VNC protocol uses the RFB, Remote Frame Buffer protocol, and that means that it will send back the screen squares. Only the squares that change will be sent back over the network. For example, the mouse pointers, that gives you really fast updates on very low bandwidth. But if you would be watching a movie, that would be really slow in the updates. There you would need very high bandwidth. Now, that is the simplest form. Just sending back the little squares to the controlling computer. Some encoding could help here. And both the computer, the client, and the server can agree on the encoding used. Now, I'm going to detail really fast here. Let's step back a little bit. Wouldn't it be nice that you can control every computer you want? I mean, every computer that you have access to and you can install VNC server on, you can control with your own computer via VNC client. And it doesn't matter what computer it is. It can be a Linux computer, it can be an OS X computer, it can be Microsoft Windows. You can install VNC server on almost everything. And now for the really, really fun part. You don't even need a client on the client side. You can even do it via a browser. But I'll get back on that one later on. I'll give you a practical example. I had to buy a new laptop for my mother. I bought her a nice little Dell, 17-inch. I'm really jealous. But my mother takes computer classes, Windows, of course, so I had to install XP. She's pretty good with a computer, but still sometimes she needs some assistance. Now, we live about 30 kilometers from each other, so that means that it's difficult to go over and just help her out every time she has a problem. So I want to have control over that machine from a long distance. I just installed VNC server on that machine, and what I do is I let her click on a shortcut in her browser that directs her to a page on my web server so that she can read her IP address, so that I know what her IP address for the moment is, or you can have somebody surf to whatsmyip.com, for example. Then I just take my VNC client, I make a connection to her computer where VNC server is installed, I type in the password I put on the VNC server, and I take complete control over that machine. Another example, my godfather lives in France, and I'm from Belgium, so that's about 1,000 kilometers from here. It's the internet. The principle is the same. Once in a while, I do an intervention from here, and while I'm doing that intervention, we are talking on internet telephony, and I could guide him through all the little problems he has with his computer. So this is one example where you can use VNC just for helping out family and friends. Now, you could use it in a professional way as well. At work, every server that we administer has a VNC server on it. For example, OSX servers, they come pre-built with ARD, that is Apple Remote Desktop, and they have a VNC option as well. I just have to click accept VNC connections and I can remote control those machines. I can use them on Sun Solaris, I can use them on Windows NT servers. All our clients, all our laptops, Windows XP clients are completely controllable via VNC. My servers in the garage are all equipped with VNC servers. They have no screens, no keyboards attached. I can control them just from the living room wireless. So that's another example as well. Most of the Linux distributions come with a sort of a VNC server pre-installed. You just have to go to, I think, Preferences, Remote Desktop, and just activate it. Now, the version of VNC that is used on most Linux distributions is, in my opinion, not one of the best. If you can, just install tight VNC over it. And that brings me to the features. Because I've been talking about VNC, but what makes tight VNC different? Tight VNC is just one of the many flavors of VNC you can download and use. For starters, this implementation of VNC is really actively developed. There is support for file transfers in the Windows version, so you can upload and download files that you need on your server machines or client machines. There is better cursor handling, so the client will update the cursor alone, not the whole screen or a fraction of a screen. There is a really efficient compression algorithm that generates less traffic. You can choose between the different compression levels. Now, most of the VNC clients can do this as well, but here they really state it as a feature. You can use JPEG compression, which is much faster. And they have as well the enhanced web browser access. That brings me to the web browser access. You don't need a VNC client to control a VNC server. You can use a VNC client, but you can as well take any browser that is Java compatible and browse to the IP address or the domain and host name of your server that you want to control to port 5800 instead of the 5900, which is the default for the VNC client. And then a Java viewer will start, and you can control the computer you want to control in a Java applet. So that's very, very handy. If you, for example, are a system administrator and you are walking around in between your clients and working on one laptop, for example, and somebody calls you from the other side of the company and he wants assistance immediately, you can just take his browser, serve to the IP address or domain name, hostname of that person via port 5800, and you can control it completely by Java. Nothing has to be installed on that laptop to do so. That is really cool. Okay, more features of Tide VNC. You have two password modes. There's full control, so you can take full control of the server. There's read-only, so you can only see what is going on. Then there is a better graphical user interface under the Microsoft Windows version. You can choose arbitrary port numbers, which is really interesting. You probably don't want your machines listening on the default ports of VNC, because that are the ports that are really targeted by hackers. So you can take another port, 9969, something like that, and just write it down somewhere, and that will not be targeted normally. Then there is SSH tunneling. You can do SSH tunneling with Tide VNC. Now, this is very important. This brings us to the security. The password you will be transmitting over the network to make a connection is completely encrypted. But all the rest, so all the mouse movements, all the screen updates, are sent completely unencrypted over the network. So anybody who is monitoring your traffic could replicate that movement and could see everything you are doing. This is really a problem amongst most of VNC client servers. It is really a security breach. And Tide VNC is actively developing a client that will make by default an SSH connection to the server. For now, they don't have that. So you really should, if you can, create your own SSH tunneling to your server and add a tunnel of source port 5900, for example, and the destination you make localhost 5900. In that way, you have full encryption, and you can add another layer of security and have the server only listen to connections from the local host. If you are tunneling over an SSH network, then normally you will be acting as if you are on the server. Okay, now this for some people will be very difficult. If you know what SSH tunneling is, this is not difficult, but for most of the people it is, and that is not really a good point. Other features are performance optimizations in Tide VNC and bug fixes. That brings us to the negative aspects. As I said, security, still a major issue, but as I said as well, Tide VNC is working on that one. Ultra VNC, another application that uses the VNC protocol, has built-in encryption. So you can check that out if that's really important for you and you don't want to tunnel. The author of Tide VNC, the lead developer, is Konstantin Kaplinski. He's really responsible for the Tide encoding and the local curl handling that makes Tide VNC what it is. Some tips. I couldn't get the Tide VNC viewer to work under OS X, nor with Darwin ports, nor from source. Maybe something I did, I couldn't get it to work. But I still wanted an open source VNC viewer on my machine, so I just had to download the Java version of Tide VNC viewer, and you can use it as a standalone application as well, just from the terminal. Just type Java VNC viewer host, that host, port, that port, and you have your own VNC viewer, lightweight, on your OS X machine, for example. It's, like I said, available for all Unix-based machines, most of the Unix-based machines. It's available for Windows machines, and because you have a Java viewer, you can use it on any operating system that has a browser that accepts Java applets. And that is mostly all of the modern browsers, so you can use it on almost everything. The latest release is 1.2.9. Development release is 1.3.8. Where to get it? You can get it from www.tightvnc.com. The license is GNU license, general public license. Now, how can you support it? Companies that use TightVNC can make a donation, for example. Or if you have enough money, just make your own donation. There's a mailing list where you can help each other out. You can report bugs. You can write documentation if you want to. You can get the word around. That's for sure. And you can make links to the TightVNC site if you have a web page that is actively viewed. You can write reviews for the product, like I'm doing now. And you can rate them on software directories like freshmeat.net. The TightVNC group also has a project, Tight Projector, which really transmits a screen of a computer to a class of computers. You can use it to demonstrate to a whole board, a meeting board of directors on their laptops what you are doing, for example. They have a trial version for 20 minutes. You can try it out, and if it suits your needs, contact the developers. I think they are now in a stage where they will be selling that product. I hope they will do it under the GNU GPL and keep an open source version of that one available as well. Okay, on to the next one. Well, it's velvety.
A little extra.
XPlanet. I'll give you a description. XPlanet is inspired by the non-free program XEarth. What it does, it renders an image of the Earth, or another planet, into the X window. Now, you can use this, for example, as a background. I'm using it now as a background, and I have a map of the whole world. I can see where it's daylight, I can see where it's night, and it's constantly updated, well, constantly every 1 minute or every 3 minutes, depending on your preferences. And it brings a bit of a peace to the desktop. It brings a bit of calm to the desktop. Like you're just the little ant you are on this world, and all the other ants are sleeping or working or doing other stuff. It's really scary. It's also time tracking. You can think about the time it took for the sun to move from that country to that country and what you really did with that time. It's scary even. So, as I said, you can use other planets as well. If you don't want to look to the at the Earth, you can look at Venus, for example, taking from the point of the sun or from another planet. You can take, I think they have all 8 or 9 planets in their preferences. Now, normally I'm not too fond of planets on my desktop. It cranks the geek level really, really up if you are catched with a planet or something else from outer space on your desktop. But this one is really nice to look at, even if you're not fond of all the planetary stuff. There's a very good config file, and you can configure everything you need. You can configure the updates, you can configure the grid to use, the map to use, the cloud gamma if you know what you're doing, no problem at all. They have a lot of examples on their website, because if you have to configure that for yourself, you don't really know what you're getting. But there you can, there they have JPEGs where they show you what the result can be if you tweak the config file. What are the features? Well, all the major planets, as I said, can be drawn. You can use different map projections like Azimuth, Lambert, Mercator, Molweide, whatever that is, orthographic and rectangular. Me, for example, I have the world, the Earth, completely expanded on my desktop, so I can see every country on it. That is one of those options. I can't remember which one. You can have weather info as well. You can see clouds, storms. It gets the info from a central database. Now, this info is took from the Science and Engineering Center at the University of Wisconsin. You can even put earthquakes, volcanoes on it. I can't imagine what this thing did with the tsunami. But anyway, I've put that on as well. It's not so peaceful anymore then. It's not so quiet anymore, so I just removed them. And you can track satellites as well. Now, this is really, really cool. You can, for example, track a satellite if you have the TLE file, which describes the orbital elements of that the orbital element of that satellite, and then you can just track them. For example, they have the Hubble telescope as an example, and then you can just see where the Hubble telescope is moving. Negative aspects. There aren't any negative aspects in such a beautiful program. So, no, none. The author is Hari Nair. I'm definitely sure that I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but what the hey. Okay, some tips. As always, if you're going to use this thing better than I'm doing now, I just installed it and just tweaked some things, then you should read the documentation. There's a lot to configure to get the most out of this program. Availability. You can use it on a Linux machine, FreeBSD, OS X via Darwin, or via OS X Planet. OS X Planet is a software application which uses the core of XPlanet, and then you can just use it on your Aqua machine. And you can use it on Microsoft Windows systems as well with Cygwin, Cygwin being the Unix emulator on Windows. The latest release is 1.2.0. You can get it at xplanet.sourceforge.net. The license is GNU, General Public License. Now, how to support this one? You can check the fora. You can help each other out, like as always, when you're configuring this program. You can donate if you want to, and they state on their website that you can donate in this order. You can donate the FSF, the Free Software Foundation, or you can support sourceforge.net, which hosts about tens of thousands of open source software projects, so they're really worth supporting. Or you can support XPlanet itself, and the offer promises not to do anything useful with your money. Now that's okay, I promise not to do anything useful with your software, so we're even. Some listener feedback. Bart Hackford, he is the main developer of Gparted. He was pleased with the review, but liked to add that he doesn't do this all by himself. And that's true. Certainly, I had to mention Patrick Werner, who does the live CD, and his brother Larry, who does the documentation. I have to mention that I'm still having fun with Gparted. Today, I moved a complete Linux distribution from one disk to another. I just had to tweak the FS tab and the grub a little bit, and it just was identical like it should, so thank you. We had a lot of positive reactions from the System Trash audience. I don't know if you know System Trash, but I did a podcast and a vidcast with Frank de Grave. We had to stop it due to a lot of work. There was a lot of time spent to System Trash. We had to get together to tape it, and it wasn't always that convenient. So we both went our separate ways. Frank is doing the Neat Little Mac Apps podcast. You can find him at neatlittlemacapps.com. And it's cool if you're really interested in nice, good Apple software. Check out Neat Little Mac Apps. He does this every week. There are promo codes and free serial numbers of the apps he will be reviewing. Now, of course, if you would go open source all the way, why would you need serials and promo codes? But hey, if Apple software is your thing, go to Neat Little Mac Apps. Some people complained about the volume of the intro. I heard things about going deaf and nearly running over pedestrians, so I will pipe down the volume on the intro a little bit. Okay, let's wrap it up. Leave your comments on sourcetrunk.com or mail me directly via sourcetrunk@gmail.com. The theme song of this podcast is by Brand New Sin, and it's called Freight Train. You can find them on music.podshow.com. I'm leaving you with Boo Ba 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 by Shag. It's a nice mixture of funk, soul, and down-tempo. Thanks for your time, and good hunting.
Got it.